Hover taxiing, stall spins, slips, and moving to Buffalo to find IMC. Bob Miller answers listener email. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob also operates Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport in Western New York. And Bob, we have a couple of listener emails today, and I want to talk about them a little bit. First, thanks for being here.
Well, my pleasure as always. It's a pleasure talking with you, Paul.
Well, and I must note that the Bob Miller media empire has expanded beyond beyond podcasts and local media. You were on CNN recently.
What a joy that was. Unfortunately, anytime I get on the media like that, it has to do with some other air tragedy, and that's always sad news. But it was interesting. They called us, and they called us through Over the Airwaves. So that was quite an honor.
Well, that's pretty neat. Well, let's talk about a couple of emails we got from listeners, and I want to start with one that was sent to us by a listener named Mike Savage. And first of all, he starts his email, Bob, I really look forward to your Monday morning broadcasts. Even if it's repetitive, it all needs to be said over and over again. And I had to stop and laugh there because the first thing that came to my mind was, if there's anything that's repetitive, it's watching the endless parade of stall spin accidents and the other things that seem to go wrong over and over that are preventable.
Well, repetition is the price of learning, and a lot of this is repetitive, and we just have to package the message up in different ways that people will hear it and understand it. That's the only way we're going to get to any kind of significant reduction in our accident rate.
All right, this email continues. You and Paul have talked about hover taxiing down the runway. I assume this is where we come in on final and basically fly at the slowest possible speed, 34 knots in my Cessna 172, and apply enough power to just keep it off the runway. I fly into Van Nuys, California, so I have an 8,000-foot runway to play with. Is this what you're describing?
That's precisely what I'm describing, Paul. Hover taxiing is, if anybody has watched a helicopter move from point A to point B on a ramp, that's exactly what they do. They just kind of fly at a foot or two off of the pavement and get to where they want to go. This is an outstanding way to develop pitch power and control skills as we're learning to fly. And one of the exercises that we do long before we solo a student is do exactly as Mr. Savage has revealed. That is, bring the airplane down close to the runway. The longer the runway, the better. And enough power just to keep it flying. And usually the stall horn is squeaking and chirping along the area, along the entire length of the runway. But it's a masterful way of learning how to track the center line using rudder, using ailerons, using power and pitch to develop constant control of the airplane. It's a wonderful exercise.
Well, and it's a familiar term to anybody who is involved in rotorcraft.
And let me jump in. We do this up at the Niagara Falls International Airport, which is a Class D airport, joint use military and civilian. And many times of the day, they're just not very active up there, and they have a 9,000-foot runway. And we combine the hover taxi exercise with teardrop turns back to the same runway in the opposite directions, if the winds will permit this. So we can get basically 9 and 9. That's 18,000 feet of runway if we go forward and then backwards over that in an hour exercise. And try to keep in mind, of course, the student is paying almost $200 an hour for these lessons in today's modern aircraft and instructor fees. So the more times we can get them close to the runway and exercising those landing skills in the shortest possible time, it's the most economical way to train.
All right, let's talk about recovering from a stall. Now, one of the things that you have suggested people do is go up with an instructor and go ahead and do full braking stalls, because a lot of times in the modern training environment, instructors don't ask that, and you can get through a check ride in many cases without the designated examiner asking that. But really, you ought to know how to do that. You ought to experience that and the recovery from it. But Mike says, I assume, now he's talking about pulling the stick back, slowly stalling the plane, leaving feet off the rudders. He says, I assume the nose will slice through the left at or just before the stall break. You have said it will go into a spiral. What is the recovery sequence?
Well, the recovery sequence from a spiral is a little bit different from a spin. A spiral, the airplane is still flying. It's still traveling through the air and gaining speed. So the recovery sequence is just reduce the power And we don't have to worry about lowering the nose because it's already the stall. In fact, it hasn't stalled if it's in a spiral. Level the wings, retard the power, and just fly out of the descent. That's a little bit different than a stall recovery. But I think what he was talking about, or at least relating what I was talking about, one of the most effective and most realistic stall training exercises is a power on stall or a full power climb with our feet off of the rudder. And this is an eye-opening experience for most students who have never, in fact, instructors that have never tried this. Climb to a safe altitude first, at least 3,000 feet AGL, and then go into a power on climb as if going into a power on stall, but keep your feet flat on the floor, not on the rudder. And as that airplane begins to pitch up, the combined four left turning tendencies will all work together right at the point of stall. The nose and airplane will snap to the left, and the airplane nose will immediately drop down into a spin. At that point, then we have to initiate immediate recovery procedures. It's really kind of a cross-controlled stall is what is happening because of all of the left-turning tendencies. Do this with an experienced flight instructor who has gone through this. That's a much, much more effective training exercise than to go off and to go up and just simply try to simulate a wings level stall, which very rarely happens in the real world.
All right. Now, Mike also echoes something that you said, and that was that Rich Stoll's spin training, which is available in California most of the year and Idaho now in the summers. He says, I crammed all 12 modules into 2 weeks, qualified for wings credit at the advanced and master category all along the way, was able to do three of the lessons in my Cessna 172. But he mentions that something Rich told him was that a forward slip, which we discussed earlier, he says Rich taught that the slip was a stable maneuver, and he's a little confused because you've said it's a point of caution for a possible spin hazard.
Well, first of all, he's receiving about the best training he can get from an aerobatic perspective. Rich is the best guy out there, and I certainly would not want to second guess or try to outjudge Rich. I think it's a matter of interpretation. Properly conducted, properly performed, a forward slip is a very, very safe maneuver. We're just putting the airplane sideways to the wind or the oncoming wind and creating a massive amount of drag. My concern, though, is because the airplane is yawed by definition in a slip, if we get the airplane in a slip too close to a stall angle of attack, then we have a stall combined with a yaw, which converts immediately into a spin. Remember that. A stall combined with a yaw, which is inherent in the forward slip, will produce a spin every time. And if we do this close to the ground, and that's usually where we're doing forward slips to get down to the runway in a short amount of distance as possible. So I remind my students that anytime we do a forward slip, it's absolutely essential that we keep the angle of attack below the critical angle of attack, or keep the angle of attack well below the stall angle of attack. If we induce a forward slip while approaching a stall, then we could have a stall combined with a yaw, which in every case produces a spin, and that happening close to the ground is not recoverable.
All right, when we come back from the break, Bob, I want to talk about another email, somebody who obviously takes the notion of training in real IMC very seriously. My guest is Bob Miller. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you are listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. And Bob, we have often talked about folks who live in places where it's tough to get real IMC to practice in. Taking instructions, you know, picking up and going someplace where there is real IMC. And we had an email from a guy named Scott Snyder who listens to our podcasts, and he says, your inspiring opening article in the August Over the Airwaves convinced me I need to move to KBQR, which is your airport, to study with you and your flight instructors. And he's talking about actually pulling up from Colorado and relocating to Buffalo, New York to get some training. And how many people do this? I mean, this sounds like an extreme thing to do.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a smart thing to do. If I wanted to learn, really master mountain flying and flying on lake bottoms and river bottoms and flying off of glaciers, I would go spend a month or two with my friend Don Lee up in Talkeetna, Alaska. That's where these conditions exist. Therefore, that's where I would go to train. We've been hosting a number of students from across the United, actually across the world. We had one coming in from Hong Kong. He's coming back for some more training this early part of October, specifically to train in the IFR environment. And there's no greater IFR environment than airports located on the east side of the Great Lakes, particularly as we get into the winter season. We have just gray skies from 2,500 feet to 6,000 feet all winter long. And it's a wonderful place to train in instrument conditions coupled with wintertime conditions, icing, and everything else that goes with it. So like training in Alaska for mountain flying, training in Buffalo or any of the Great Lakes communities for IFR, that's the way to do it. And we've created some residential facilities here where we can put pilots up at very low cost, housing cost-wise, and then provide accelerated training. So they only need to come in for anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of weeks to get the kind of training that will really translate to useful skills when they get back out into the real world.
Now, when you say housing at reasonable cost, do they stay at one of the places on Transit Road and make sure to bring a fly swatter, or is there something a little better available?
No, we have a unique resource at the Lancaster Airport. As part of the land that was acquired by the airport, we have a four-bedroom house that has been vacant for the past year, and we're in the process of converting that four-bedroom house into offices, classroom, and then a dormitory-type facility up on the second floor. It has kitchen, private bath, and so what we're setting out to do is making this available for our residential students to come in, those who want to come in for a couple of nights, a couple of weeks, whatever, and put them up at a very reasonable cost. They can do that, or they can choose, of course, to stay at any local motel or hotel in the area, but this is right on the field. In fact, we give them a golf cart to get to and from our classroom or our flight school from the residential facility. So it's a win-win all the way around.
Well, maybe you'll have some more people taking advantage of that. It sounds like a neat way to go, and I know that there are a lot of other places in the country where I might go for specific types of training where it would be neat to have that kind of thing available.
Well, you know, Paul, let me say this for the record. I'm going down to a meeting in San Antonio, Texas at the end of September, Cessna Pilot Center meeting, and we just checked from Buffalo, New York to San Antonio, Texas on AirTran is $150 round trip. I mean, that's almost for us clear across the country, round trip for $150. I can't fire up my 210 and get to Cleveland and back for that amount of money. And the point that I'm making is with airfares the way they are, you can get to any corner of the continental United States round trip for less than a couple hundred dollars. So if you want to learn how to fly, specialty flying, mountain flying, go to the mountains, as we said before. If you want IFR travel, then come up to the Northeast. You want congested airspace travel and get advanced IFR training in the ATC system, get over to New York City or L.A. or Alaska for specialized training. This is something that is so doable today for the cost of a couple of hours in our airplane. As I said, we can get to any part of the United States. There's no excuse, in my opinion, to obtain an instrument rating in Phoenix, Arizona, and then claim that you can be proficient in the clouds. Get the rating in Phoenix, but then come up to Chicago or Detroit or Buffalo or Boston and put that rating immediately to the task with real experienced flight instructors in this kind of environment that we live in here.
Well, Bob, we'll refer folks on how to get a hold of you if they want to do just that. And as always, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can find the current edition of Bob's newsletter at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.